Hello and welcome to Hindsight. I'm Lorena Allen. Today, a story from the ancient city of Famagusta on the island of Cyprus. The history of Famagusta is more than 36 centuries old. During the 13th century, it was considered to be the wealthiest city on earth. Shakespeare thought of it as one of the most romantic cities. His play Othello is set there. Today, it's a double city. On the one hand, a beautiful but crumbling medieval town. On the other hand, it's a modern but completely derelict city of about 8 square kilometres called Varosha, which since 1974 has been a ghost town. Today we revisit the history of the complex Cyprus problem in a very personal way with three Cypriot women. Anna is a historian and archaeologist, Lefki is a businesswoman, and Savina is an architect. They were all teenagers during the invasion and war that divided their country in half. And against the backdrop of Famagusta, their stories tell of the terrible impact of war on civilian populations. Famagusta, Amahostos, Hidden in the Sand, is produced by Anna Messeriti, herself the daughter of Greek Cypriots. And I should warn you that some listeners may find aspects of this program disturbing.
And armoured units are moving relentlessly towards Famagusta, near the capital of Nicosia.
President of Cyprus, Archbishop Makarios, has reacted bitterly to the renewed fighting.
As you've heard, a few hours ago, war erupted again in Cyprus.
The dust settled on the Archbishop's embattled republic. Turkish forces appeared to be well on their way to controlling a sizable slice of the northern half of the island.
My neighbourhood is built in the sands. It has its roots in the seashore. My neighbourhood. Every night I dig it up, but it hides back again.
I'm walking on the edge of a white sandy beach, looking at the ghost of a once proud city on the shoreline. I first saw her from a distance, Famagusta, or Amahostos to some. She's a concubine now, jealously guarded by men with weapons, looking more shameful by the day. A forbidden zone of abandoned life. As night slowly descends, her image dissolves in a pitch black sky. There are no lights in Famagusta, not even a candle. I dig around in the dry sand, trying to find shards of truth. I meet one of her children, an archaeologist, who helps me to excavate the fragments that I need to tell her story.
Amahostos means something which is buried in the sand. Amos is the sand. Famagusta, the Latin name, some say that it's from Fama Augusta, Augusta being one of the Roman emperors, the wife called Flavia Augusta, so the famous Augusta. Others quote that the Fama Gusta, the Gusta comes from Kost Konstantinos, because when Salamis was destroyed by the earthquakes, another city was built by the Ptolemies called Arsinoe, with a harbour. Now, when Arsinoe fell from the Ptolemies and the earthquakes, a new city was built called Constantia from another Byzantine emperor, Constantius. And then Varosha is the Turkish name of the city, which we Greek Cypriots use very much, which means the new town that the Christians built after they were expelled by the Ottomans in 1571. That city they called Varosha.
Bano Varosha, Gado Varosha, waterless, dry lichen, in the refugee tents, in the refugee settlements, in the refugee housing schemes.
It is an incredibly rich history. You have a country that has a Greek past, until the 16th century. It's been a completely Greek island ever since. It has been inhabited and has been conquered by a number of other countries, but it has kept its origins, it has kept its language. It's one of the few areas of the world where the same language that was spoken in 1200 BC is the same language as it's spoken right now. You can still hear words of the dialect that Homer uses in the Iliad and the Odyssey in Paphos area. The island stayed under Ottoman rule until 1878, where it was sold to the British. And the only things the Ottomans imposed was that all the Christians would leave the old medieval town. And this is why the Famagustans moved towards the south, and that's where they built the new town of what we call Varosi today. This is actually the town that now is a ghost town. Nobody lives there. For 30 years, I mean, we see our houses from far away. We're not allowed to go and see them, even after the borders opened. The only people that are not allowed to see Famagusta are the Famagustans.
Old city, dead, deserted, I weep for you. Home where my babes were born, this is your end. Who would not weep? City lost, children lost, all lost. Was there ever heard such chorus of pain? When were such tears shed for a murdered house? Can even the dead see this and forget to weep?
I was born in Famagusta in 1961. And the first things I remember is orange trees.
My name is Sabina. I'm half Turkish Cypriot. My mother's Bulgarian. My father was studying in Bulgaria, where he met my mother. And he was offered a job here in the Communist Party in the mid-60s. So we moved from Bulgaria here. I was about 4 years old when I came.
I'm Anna Marangou. My father comes from Famagusta. His whole family actually comes from Famagusta. He was a very well-known surgeon in Cyprus. His whole family were traders in wood. So this is where actually we get our name from. Marangos means a carpenter.
I was born in Famagusta in 1961. And the first things I remember is orange trees. I'm under a tree, but it's not just one tree. It's lots of trees that you cannot even see the sky or the sun up high. And it's hot, but it's so nice and cool. And it's that smell of wet soil. And it's summer, and I'm lying there under the trees, washing up the sky, but I cannot see the sky. I can only see these rays of sun coming through the leaves of an orange tree. So it's all these sweet little memories that will never go out of my mind. It's memories that even if I'm sad or if something happens, I recall these memories and I feel better. That's my first memory of Famagusta.
We came in 1965, at the time when the Turkish Cypriots had separated in parliament from the Greek Cypriots. Well, my father was offered a job in the Communist Party, which at that time had the Turkish Cypriots had also moved away from Agel. They had split the trade unions and so on. So we lived with Greek Cypriots. Greek Cypriots protected my father at that time.
I was at the high school at that time, and I remember people coming and finding the youngsters saying, come on, tonight let's do something crazy. Let's go and put Greek flags and do graffiti on the walls and stuff like that. So we were young kids. We didn't actually know what we are doing.
I remember coming into Cyprus at that age and entering a street where everybody was wearing black. And that was shortly after the murder of Kavazoglu and Mishaoulis. Kavazoglu was a Turkish Cypriot trade union activist who was shot and killed in an ambush by the TMT, together with his Greek Cypriot friend. And we actually went to live in the street where these two men lived before their assassination. So it was a very charged time. It was a rather strange time to be here.
We didn't actually know what we are doing. Our parents didn't know. We just waited for our parents to sleep. We found our friends and we went from wall to wall and do graffiti about Eoka, about the Yanis, about this thing, I mean political things. We are put to do that, but actually we didn't know. We were just feeling proud. You know, at the age of 13, you want to do things. You want to be different.
In the decay of British colonialism and the shadow of NATO, idealists drowned in the violent currents that promised freedom. Caught up in a naive quest for equality and self-government, they couldn't see that their tiny island was seen by the mighty as a giant aircraft carrier. In the end, they became the prey of the angry children of colonialism, Eoka and TMT, nationalists and separatists. And they were doomed.
And then I realized that people were getting killed. And then I realized that it was a civil war between us. But we didn't know what we are doing. We are used. And this is the age of 13. You think differently. You think that you can conquer the world. But the world conquers you.
Then remember my warning. And when you are caught by calamity, don't lay the blame on fortune, or say that Zeus plunged you in suffering unforeseen. Not Zeus, but yourselves will be to blame. You know what is coming. It is neither sudden nor secret. Only your own folly will entangle you in the inextricable net of destruction.
This morning on Cyprus, Turkish tanks and armored units are moving relentlessly towards Famagusta, near the capital of Nicosia. At the same time, United Nations spokesmen say that Turkish units are beginning to encircle the main airport on Cyprus. They say that the ceasefire in Nicosia itself is holding so far.
A few hours ago, war erupted again in Cyprus.
The first indication that a fresh war was about to be unleashed on Cyprus came from Turkish radio, which broadcast warnings to shipping and aircraft to stay clear of Cyprus. Then at 5 o'clock in the morning, Cyprus time, Turkish jets swooped down over the capital Nicosia to bomb its radio station and several other targets.
When desolation falls like a blight, the day for the worship of gods is past.
Civilians were seen rushing out of their houses to seek safety in the basements of big buildings. Britain has started to move the wives and children of British soldiers in Cyprus into the safety of the British bases there.
I'm watching what Royal Air Force officers say is the biggest civilian evacuation they've yet undertaken. Already they've flown nearly 5,000 holidaymakers and foreign residents of Cyprus to Britain.
Lost city. Lost child. What climax of suffering lacks now? Have we not reached, in a headlong plunge, the abyss of pain?
In the day before the rescue, women and children cowered in corridors of hotels to keep away from flying glass and bullets which whined through the windows.
One French woman told me how she'd had to spend 2 days in the corridor of her shattered house without food and for 12 hours without even water. When she tried to escape from it this morning, she was surrounded by Turkish soldiers and tanks.
The British Defence Department announced hours after the ceasefire that at least 50 tourists had been killed when the Turkish Air Force bombed a hotel in Famagusta.
But there are still reports of shooting incidents coming in from Famagusta, according to sources at a British Air Force base a few miles away.
It's now up to the United Nations Blue Helmets to try and get all armed forces on Cyprus to observe the ceasefire totally.
In many areas, fighting has been intense, and I cannot provide you with the security or protection that I would wish. The United Nations are doing a magnificent job in trying to arrange a ceasefire, and I am still hopeful that this can be arranged. My advice to you is very short. Keep calm, stay indoors, and take no chances.
Turkish Cypriot radio has been claiming that Famagusta has fallen.
I'll tell you how we left Famagusta back in 1974. We were hearing what was happening. There was no news, of course. There was no television. There was nothing that was on the radio. We had heard that there was the invasion. But we were in Famagusta, which was a tourist town, and nobody would expect that anything would happen to it because it was full of foreign people.
The first 600 British, German, Dutch and Israeli tourists were taken out yesterday.
So word spread that the Turks were going to bomb the city, and everybody thought it would have been a good idea just to go towards Dhekelia, which was a British base, which was very close, so as not to be in the bombing. So in the morning of the 16th of August, a month after the invasion, my mother told us, okay, get into the car, or we'll go for a couple of hours in Dhekelia until this whole thing is over. And this is how we left. We left, we were wearing flip-flops in the bottom of our bikini and a T-shirt on top. This is how everybody left.
And evacuating to the British sovereign base areas,
Famagusta was abandoned by its people because all the men, of course, were fighting. It was just the women folk. It was the tourists. The town was bombed, and we never got back.
I was 11 years old and in Sydney during the invasion. I watched it unfold on television while the grandparents that I've never known became enclaved in their home. Whenever I look at women who are my own age in Cyprus, I wonder at what they carry with them from 1974.
First thing I remember is the noise of the aeroplanes. And for many years, till lately, I couldn't hear the noise of an aeroplane. The next thing I remember is that piece of metal burning next to me. My mother is the kind of person that she gets panic very easily. But I wasn't panicking. I don't know why. It's my character, maybe. The next thing I have in my mind, it's a dead man hanging from a wall. The other thing I have in my mind is a destruction everywhere. All these people just running, going out of the town.
I believe this. To be dead is the same as never to have been born. And better far than living on in wretchedness. The dead feel nothing. Evil then can cause no pain. But one who falls from happiness to unhappiness wanders, bewildered, in a strange and hostile world.
Our house was in the town, but all the property and all the houses of my aunties and everybody was in the main road that we had to follow to evacuate Famagusta. So many cars tried to get out of the town. We stopped at our auntie's house. So all the families will go out together. I was a wise one, as always. I was left behind because they thought that I was in one car and the others thought that I was in another car, sorry. I don't want my mother to see me crying. The military didn't come all the way to Famagusta. They made a circle and people got stuck there. I got stuck there because I was trying to help twins, two little babies that they were at the age of 5. I was trying, they were in the fields and they were crying, and I was trying to find their mother. That's why I was left behind. I wasn't left behind on purpose. So I don't want to go into too many details, if it's okay with you. At the age of 13, my life ended there. We have been raped and we have been marked like animals with... Sorry. Oh God, I don't want you to see me crying. We have been marked like animals with hot iron. The sign of their flag with the star. Okay? I want to show you something.
When Lefke lifts up her skirt and shows me her scars, I begin to understand the mask of sorrow that is her face.
Because I had to be cut off.
There is nothing I can say in response to this revelation.
Sorry.
There are no words to describe or provide comfort for such a cruel thing.
The twins, the one was shot. And I don't know what happened to the other one. The next thing I remember, it was summer and it was so hot. I was thrown at the dead bodies. I was thrown, they thought that I was dead. And I had to pretend and smell that. It was the smell of death. All over me, on top of me, everywhere. But I had to stay there till night. Yeah, and I was still alive.
Like Famagusta, Lefke is trapped in the unspeakable trauma of 1974. In her heart of hearts, she is forever 13, waiting for release and redemption. Will her day ever come? As each day goes by, it seems less and less likely.
What a pitiful, terrible fate. Never did I dream that so strange a story would ever come to my ears. That anguish, cruelty, terror, so bitter to see and to endure, would ever chill my spirit with a wound so sharp. Alas, fate. Fate.
And it now seems likely that Cyprus will become two separate states, one ruled by Turkish Cypriots, the other by Greek Cypriots. This is what the Turkish Prime Minister, Mr. Ecevit, wants, and after a two-hour meeting with the American ambassador in Ankara, Mr. William McComber, Mr. Ecevit says he has United States backing for his two-state plan.
It's funny, you know, when I compare how I cross over now, just walk through, past Leader Palace, nobody gives you any attention, you just go through. And when I remember the first time that I met some of my relatives there after 74, I was introduced to two of my cousins. I think it must have been around 1985 or 86. We went there. My father had arranged something through the UN. It took a lot of effort anyway. It was my grandmother, my little nene with her white headkerchief, and my dede, my grandfather. We had to go through a soldier checkout, you know, my very dangerous grandfather and grandfather and myself, to cross through into the strip of road between the two checkpoints to wait there. The UN soldiers came carrying guns. We were escorted inside the Lidra Palace, put to sit down at some chairs, and then likewise, some of my Turkish Cypriot relatives came across. During the whole meeting, we were surrounded by UN soldiers who had strict orders not to let go of their guns. Even when one soldier brought refreshments and soft drinks for us, I remember making fun at him and said, "Shall I take that?" offering to relieve him of his gun rather than the tray he was carrying. Now, why on earth do you need to carry a gun? Who are we a danger to? Anyway, in that situation, we had a very emotional meeting with my aunt and my cousins that I had not seen as a baby. Last time I had seen her, she was a baby in arms. And then we left. And I remember sitting in that street, crying my guts out, because they were walking one way and I was walking the other way. And I just felt it so bloody unfair and so stupid. We never formed family ties with each other. And even now, I feel odd to go and visit these people. I don't know them. I don't know my relatives. So, you know, when I hear Cypriots, Greek Cypriots especially, carrying on, especially before the referendum, some things were really striking. Such a false ring to my ears. I know there was a lot of suffering, but I've suffered also in different ways.
It's not easy to overcome things like that. I finished school. I went for studies. But I could see that gradually I was becoming an alcoholic. Inside me, I was trying to kill myself. I couldn't sleep for years. During the night, I wasn't even daring closing my eyes. I was on alert all the time. I couldn't even hear a plane passing. I have nothing against Turkish Cypriots because they have suffered a lot too. But I don't accept to sit and have a military from Turkey next to me or opposite me or near me. No way. I feel like I'm selling my soul just to do that. No way.
In a way, I commiserate with everybody. I feel sorry for the Turkish Cypriots. I feel their pain. I feel sorry for the Greek Cypriots. I feel their pain. I don't feel guilty for anything because I don't think I was to blame. But, you know, sometimes when somebody doesn't know you're a Turkish Cypriot, they will voice an opinion saturated with hatred.
Savina is the bright child of a brutal and divisive war. She restores old buildings and towns by day, protecting history from the engineers of the future. She pleads for the world to put humanity before politics when it decides the ultimate fate of her own children.
At the moment, I don't see a solution, and the future for Cyprus, I regret to say, for the ordinary, decent, humble peasant living there, is very black indeed.
Now, I have made clear to Mr. Gunish that it seemed to me that when the issues of peace and war may hang on this decision, that it was unreasonable to deny a period of 36 hours. I cannot believe that the peace of the Eastern Mediterranean depends upon 36 hours.
The conflict between Greece and Turkey is a disaster for both countries and is a disaster for the Western alliance. And we hope that all parties concerned within the United States as well as in the Eastern Mediterranean will understand the larger interests involved.
As will be seen from the above report, ANFISIP has been doing all it can to prevent the present violence from causing renewed intercommunal strife. Moreover, in the context of the Cyprus problem, such events carry a serious risk of a threat to international peace and security in a much wider framework. For all these reasons, and in view of the Security Council's responsibilities in the Cyprus problem, I have felt it my duty to make this report to the Council today.
The Turkish Foreign Minister, Mr. Güneş, refused, arguing that this was a time-wasting tactic designed to avoid decision. And it's that refusal which has led directly to the complete collapse of the Geneva talks. The British Foreign Secretary, Mr. Callaghan, at his press conference, made no secret of the fact that he thought the Turkish behaviour was unreasonable.
All through these years, the gods had but one end in mind. No other destiny than this for me. And Famagusta, the one city they chose for their especial hate. Our sacrifices and our prayers have all been vain.
There has been a war, 1974. There have been the winners and the losers of this war. We have come to terms with four Annan plans before the final fifth one was presented. Why would the UN invest in people and really work as much as they did to produce this plan without consulting with the people? Nobody explained to the average Greek Cypriot what federation is all about. Nobody explained to any Greek Cypriot that, sorry, you're going to lose your house. Yes. This is it. The motto of the Greek Cypriot government was all refugees back in their houses. Nothing of the sort was in the Annan plan. Instead of this possibility of returning, we were given issues like, we will return the town of Famagusta in 104 days. The people that lived in the enclaved area right now could return immediately to their homes. The town of Morfu would be given in a period of 6 to 7 years. The villages so-and-so will be given in a period of 10 to 15 years. And how do we get to go back? We only get to go back in ratio of population. Now, who, Greek Cypriot, would abandon his home, being over the age of 65, because they would return immediately, would go on his own and settle in a place where the majority would be Turkish Cypriot and settlers? Nobody. This is why there was a no. Nobody believed in the Annan plan. It was not meant to be understood. It was meant to be imposed. And even though I voted yes because I want to go back to my house, deep down in my soul, I feel that it's better that we voted for you. No. Because you can't impose, impose a settlement on a people which you look down upon.
Whole city, dead, deserted, I weep for you. Home where my babes were born, this is your end. Who would not weep? City lost, children lost, all lost. Was there ever heard such chorus of pain? When were such tears shed for a murdered house? Can even the dead see this and forget to weep?
What suffered from the invasion of 1974 was the churches. They were turned into stables or bars or nightclubs or just pulled down. There are very many known cases of illegal exportation of the frescoes belonging to beautiful monasteries like the Canacariada. There was even a law case in the United States. Some person bought some mosaics from the Church of Canacaria, and the Church of Cyprus proved that they were illegally cut out of the church and they were given back to us. So you see, there has been an amazing amount of plundering and looting.
What does it mean when you make a sacred place into a stable? What does it do when you turn a church into a mosque? If you rape a building, is it still rape?
We now are expecting trial of 300 items that are in Germany right now, and we're trying to prove their origins. And by the time we prove their origins, due to the German law, because it's 30 years now that these items have been exported, they will belong legally to the Germans. They won't belong to us anymore. There are people on the other side that understand and feel how we feel, because there has been an amazing amount of destruction on that side concerning our cultural heritage. And I think Turkey should have the official blame for that. She never did. It's not the Turkish Cypriot that destroyed our churches. It's the Turkish army.
What is the function of an uninvited stranger who wears a uniform and carries a gun? If the army is there to protect, then why does it destroy? If the people have been liberated, then why are they crying?
My grandfather donated an amount of money to the library, so the gymnasium carry our name. It's called the Nikolaos Marangos Library. And my uncle had one of the most precious libraries of the Middle East. He was specialized in books and manuscripts and icons about Cyprus, had an amazing collection of maps, but also of all documents that dealt with the siege of Famagusta back in 1571 when the Ottoman Turks took over Cyprus.
Is it possible to prove that you own something that was always yours? Does the passing of time allow your history to be rewritten by another? How does it feel when your heritage is sold?
We've lost everything. We've lost this whole library. We're tracing it back now. We found one book that was sold in London in Sotheby's. It's not only the material loss of the people that left Famagusta. Losing the whole library was an incredible loss to us all, but also to what one would call a heritage of Cyprus, because it really had a very, very precious collection of Cypriot books. And 20 years later, I found one book on sale at an auction in London. My uncle took particular pride in redoing all his books in leather and putting his initials on it. So I found the book, and recently we also found an amount of books belonging to the library that were sold to us by Turkish Cypriots.
How does a society go on when it truly understands that what has been lost can never be found? Are there some wounds that time will not heal?
One thing I've lost, in a way, and some things I've gained. I've gained the ability to be very adaptable, and I've lost my family. I have absolutely no recollection of ever sitting with my family at a wedding, any of my relatives, my Turkish Cypriot relatives. My father had a family of about 8 brothers and sisters. I never went to their house. It's funny, you know, you come in here, I didn't even think, and every time I think about it, it makes me just want to cry. Our meeting place was in Podamnia village in my grandmother's house, which was a mixed village. My relatives lived in some of the surrounding villages, which were Turkish Cypriot, Lurugina, for instance, and Piroi in those villages. They would come and we would have very quick meetings and everybody had to go home before it went dark. This was in the 60s and 70s. I only remember one instant when we got together for New Year's Eve. And the whole New Year's celebration was over by 2 o'clock noon on December 31st. Now you'd say, why? My mother had invited my relatives to come and visit us. They came at noon instead of in the afternoon. They ate very quickly, and they left by 2 o'clock. And that was our, you know, New Year's celebration. They didn't want to be caught in the roads by drunken Greek Cypriots or drunken Turkish Cypriots out for a bit of fun, chasing people in and out of enclaves. My grandmother, she died a few years ago in 1995. She had never seen her children after 74. Very few weddings she had attended of her children, anybody who managed to get married before 74. She had never seen her grandchildren. Most of her grandchildren she didn't know. She had a little house with the walls covered in photographs. She knew every child by name. She knew who their mother was, if she had married a cousin, you know, blood cousin, a blood relative of ours. She knew everything and everybody. She had a whole sort of spider's web of our family. And she died. And, well, I can't remember all those names. But she made a point of memorizing them. So, you know, in the aftermath of everything that has happened in Cyprus, 63, 74, and all the in-between things, people lost property, people lost loved ones. We lost a way of life. Our experiences were stolen from us.
What land is this? What race lives here? Who is this that I see held in fetters of rock at the mercy of wind and storm? For what sin do you suffer such a death? Tell me, where has my miserable wandering brought me? Where will my endless, endless journeys bring me?
Famagusta remains trapped in a time warp, and Lefki keeps her company. They wait patiently for redemption, and already they have waited more than 30 years. Politicians talk in circles, their words travel in maddening loops going over the same old ground over and over again. Will Famagusta ever be free of her chains? Will Lefki ever escape from the prison of her memories? Will the children of war ever be allowed to grow up?
Before I go to bed, I walk in Famagusta, because I don't want to forget the name of the streets, everything. Before I was doing it every night. Now I'm doing it almost every night. My life is there. I need to go back and continue from my 13 onwards. Even though if I'll be 80 years old, 100, I'll still be 13 years old and I'll continue.
We walk back again 30 years later. That's when the borders opened officially. So it was a Wednesday, it was Easter time, and I don't think I felt such an incredible need to just to go. Nothing counted, but it was just to go. So we stood for hours waiting because there were huge queues. Everybody wanted to go. Everybody have felt the same. And of course, we drove to Famagusta. We walked on the sea. It was cold. It was April. And we were stopped there by some barbed wire because as the enclaved area is a closed area, we couldn't move on.
The first day, I just rushed in with no papers. I just wanted to kiss the land that gave birth to me and come back. I'm glad I wasn't caught because I know that I was going to have lots of problems. All my memories came back and it was so much anger. So much anger inside me. I mean, it's the moments that you realize why people, sometimes they want to kill.
Well, we saw this house from above, from away. We cried. I think it was one of the most important days of my life. It was just as if somebody was giving me back 30 years of my youth, because the nicest years of my life I really spent there. So ever since, I've been traveling very often to Famagusta, but to the rest of the island as well. And I'm hoping, together with some Turkish Cypriot friends, archaeologists as well, and Greek Cypriot friends, to make a petition to ask the UNESCO to put the whole of the medieval city of Famagusta under preservation, because it's a shame. It's a city that does not only belong to Cypriots. It belongs to the whole world. It's so beautiful that somebody should go and see and somebody should preserve it. And somebody should help to keep recent constructions and new developments from happening within the old city.
I mourn for my dead world, my burning town, my sons, my husband, gone, all gone. What pride of race, what strength once swelled our royal sails, now shrunk to nothing, sunk in mean oblivion.
And the want to go back is not about properties only. It's to want to go back to my land, to my home, to my way of being. Turkish Cypriot friend of mine, she says, Anna, I can't live on somebody else's land. And I don't like the sea here. I like the sea in the area of Pyrgos. It's the same sea. It's the northern coast. But it's her sea. She wants to go to her house, to where her origins are, to where she went to school, to where her parents are buried. This has all to do with the soul, and it has all to do with the attitude and the mentality of a people. We're not Westerners yet. We don't have a cool, logical approach to things. There's a lot of sentiment in our way of behaving.
You know, with my kids, all the parents, they take their kids to bed and they say a story about the Red Riding Hood or whatever. No, I was telling them stories about Famagusta, about me, about the sea. I was describing places. I was giving them details and say, you take this road and you go there. I want them to know everything. I want them to feel like they are from Famagusta.
I was a child when everything went haywire in Cyprus, when everything went totally wrong. And I'm nearing middle age. I have my generation, most of my generation, has never been given the chance to mature and to make a mature political decision. So we're already middle aged and we're already on our way out. And there is a young crop of people with motivation, and I really believe in the next generation. I really want the next generation to succeed. We're going to be the sort of silent generation, the ones with the memories, but being too young to do anything about it and being saddled with the decisions of all these octogenarians ruling us. And we're on our way out, and sensibly, we should not want to step into their shoes when we're 60. We should give way to the next generation.
I'm walking on the edge of a white sandy beach, looking at the ghost of a glorious city on the shoreline. Her name is Famagusta, and Amohostos. And although she is robed in 36 centuries of history, she's a concubine now, and she looks more shameful by the day. She cries quietly, drowning in her own salty tears. As night slowly descends, her image dissolves in a pitch-black sky. There are no lights about her, not even a candle.
In today's Hindsight, you heard the stories of three Cypriot women, Anna, Lefki and Savina. Rebecca Harvey read excerpts from Euripides' The Women of Troy and Prometheus Bound by Aeschylus. The music used in the program was by Edward Primrose and featured the voice of Micheline Jamal. The narrator was Anna Meseriti. Special thanks to the many Greek and Turkish Cypriots who contributed to the program. It was written and produced by Anna Meseriti, and the sound engineer was Andrei Shabanov, with additional recordings by Roy Huberman. And that's all from Hindsight today.